Since you're such an investigative reporter, you figure it out.
If I revealed my sources, you wouldn't talk to me.
Yeah, that'd be terrible.
Come on, Elliot. The public has a right to know a few things.
This is Two J's in a Pod. The J stands for journalist. I'm Mary Ellen Murphy with WGHN Radio.
And I'm Sarah Leach with the Ottawa News Network.
Rock is my life. And this is my song. I have been dying to say that to you. I think that's from a movie or something. Rock is my life and this is my song.
I talk a lot in movie one-liners.
Do you?
Yeah.
There you go.
Ghostbusters 1 and 2 are my go-to favorites.
There you go. I was supposed to call you over the weekend. We haven't seen each other in a while, and I was supposed to call you, but I was just so angry about the heat that I was like, if I call you, I'm just going to be complaining. And then I got mad at my boyfriend over the heat. It's your fault. He's like, this probably isn't a good time for us to put the air conditioner in. We'll kill each other. I mean, it was just, we finally got that all done, but it was hot where I live. I mean, at one point it was like 92 in the house.
I mean, yeah. I was telling you that I was in the pool most of the weekend,
yeah.
And I fell 3 times on the same knee, and all I feel is old and fat. So
I'm sorry. Oh no! I'm pool watching right now, and I was on an air mattress, laying on an air mattress,
watching the pool.
Okay,
right.
I'm pool watching.
Is the pool okay?
Yes, it is.
All right.
I'm laying on this air mattress. I'm all fatted out on this air mattress, and I'm going from one end of the pool to the other. When I get to one end, I take my hands and I push off, and I go all the way to the other end of the pool, and then I push off with my feet.
Is this how you exercise?
Yes.
The pool? Okay.
So at one point, I'm starting to get really relaxed and almost falling asleep, and I push off with my feet and I slam right into the pool. My head.
Oh,
I have a goose egg on my head from that. And I thought, oh my goodness, I could have knocked myself out or whatever.
I know pools are vicious.
I'm telling you. Do you have a Band-Aid on you? I got a cut on my finger from that pool too. Anyway.
Hate us.
Hi. What did he say? What'd you say?
Pools hate us.
That's my
oldest, y'all. If you can hear him, that's bad.
I grew up with a pool. And when you grow up with a pool and you love to swim, you want to have a pool all the time. It's just the way that it is. It's very hard for me to be out in the sun if I don't have a pool. So I'm always seeking out people that have pools like Sarah.
Well, yeah, maybe we need to use the buddy system.
That's true. You're hurting your knee. I hurt my head. Got the two of us, Amanda.
We need to watch each other.
Lucy and Ethel. Okay, so let's talk about Ottawa County, the Ottawa County Board of Commissioners. That was a pretty simple meeting. I mean, in terms, I thought that public comment would take up half the meeting, and that's not what happened.
Yeah, it's, this is a really bizarre time right now.
Yeah.
Everyone's kind of frustrated because the administrator search sort of fell apart.
Yeah.
We only had the one candidate, and then right after that, the search firm Double Hall Solutions dropped out from working with the county. I know that for the next several days, I've talked to a few commissioners and they kind of didn't know where to go from here, like what this meant, how to approach this. It was a very, fluid situation.
Mm-hmm.
I have heard that there was frustrations on Double Hall's side, that there were some commissioners that were circumventing the process, whatever that means.
Okay.
I don't know exactly what that means. There were a lot of rumors flying around. I won't repeat them here because I can't confirm them.
Right, right, right.
But I think, it sort of makes sense with what we know of the personalities on the board.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to ascribe any blame. I think that this is sort of a combination of unfortunate circumstances of just not getting the right candidates to apply and or they weren't like ready to make a commitment to the county, and also the political dynamics on the board. I think it's just sort of the perfect storm. But the only issue that I have is that what do we do now? Because we saw Chair Teeples kind of come out strong yesterday, almost let me just sort of flood the zone with what I think needs to happen here. There's nothing to see here. It's not controversial. It was almost like preemptive defensiveness of criticism. I understand why he's doing it, because he doesn't necessarily want a whole lot of speculation to happen, but it did seem a little let's control the narrative, but I also understand from his perspective why he would want to.
I don't know a whole lot about Double Hall Solutions. I do know that they're working with South Haven, helping them with their lifeguard program.
Oh yeah.
So I'm going. Yes. So they must do all kinds of stuff.
Right.
Well, okay.
Well, the lifeguard program, we actually have a reporter working on that right now.
You do.
So she. I didn't realize that Double Hall was tied to this. But
yes.
This is that's an interesting conversation because cities pulled out of lifeguard programs
yes.
because of the liability.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had somebody drown, somebody could sue the city. But if you don't staff them with lifeguards, then the city is sort of like, well, you choose your own adventure and what you get, you get. And there's been a lot of criticism because, you know, Lake Michigan by far has the most drownings mm-hmm. out of all five of the mm-hmm. Great Lakes per year. With Chicago and obviously like all of the West Michigan, you know, beaches that we have. But
yep.
It's fascinating to me that this is kind of being revisited and maybe might have some new life breathed into it. I don't know how you navigate the liability part of it, though.
I don't either.
Yeah. It's such a tough thing because you can't force people out of the water.
I do remember going to Pier Marquette Beach. There were lifeguards then, and that mm-hmm. would have been the early 2000s. And they would get out of the water, yeah. move over this way. I mean, they
can be bossy, but they technically don't have like...
I see.
Legal authority yeah. over people. Like if I'm going to refuse and say, no, I know what I'm doing and I end up dead, then is it my fault or is it their fault? I mean, that was always the question. And, you know, in the last 50 years, we've seen quite a movement towards a litigious society.
Yeah.
It's hard to...
It is.
I mean, yeah, this is why we can't have nice things.
So, okay. The reason why we were talking about that is because Double Hall is helping out the South Haven with lifeguards. Double Hall is the company that Ottawa County hired for the administrator search. And so now I guess they're going to revisit this in the late summer or something? Why?
I think they're just trying to buy themselves time.
Why?
So they have... Double Hall did perform like the hard... part of what a search firm does,
oh,
right?
Oh, I see.
They post the job, they get the applicants, they vet the people, they give a list. Like, all of that stuff was performed. And I think that from what Teeples was saying yesterday, they have the list. They want to contact candidates mm-hmm. that were on the list that were not in the top five mm-hmm. per Double Hall's algorithm to see who's in and who's out. And then they also have received, like, additional applications from other people. So what they want to do is they want to contact the list of candidates that Double Hall advanced in their top five
right.
per their algorithm
uh-huh.
and see like, okay, who's in and who's out, like mm-hmm. who is maybe still interested with an additional conversation and who's no longer interested. They're also receiving new applicants.
Oh, okay, good.
Which is interesting to me why people would apply after the process is over. I am fascinated to know who those people might
be. I am too. I know.
But I did... I sort of made like the casual comment to Chair Teeples when I talked to him after the news came out that Double Hall dropped out.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, it's almost as if you need to find somebody of the caliber and pedigree that has either served in a West Michigan-based, you know, municipal position before, or somebody who's worked for the county before,
mm-hmm.
or maybe to have somebody who's already in the county,
mm-hmm.
Or bring somebody back who left during, you know, the Ottawa Impact era of mm-hmm. the last 2 years. So it almost feels like that might be necessary.
Okay.
In order to kind of stabilize the situation, even if it's just for like a few years. I personally would not like to see somebody get offered a contract over a year.
Mm-hmm.
I think that provides the county with some, you know, like a plan B. I know that traditionally you offer 3-year contracts, but 3 years from now is when the next election is. And I don't think that any new administrator is going to want to face that sort of scenario where, what if I do a good job, but the political dynamics change in the next turnover of people on the board, and mm-hmm. then I'm out of a job. So
right.
I would think that everyone involved would probably prefer like a 1-year contract, because this is one of the most important decisions that a county can make is who's running it.
Wow. How did we get here? Well, we know how we got here, but man, oh man, it just seems like a long, well, I guess, I mean, we're done with the month of June almost, so I guess time is moving pretty fast.
Yeah.
It almost just feels like that's not a lot of time, but really, it's really not that far away, September.
Yeah.
I mean.
So this means that we stay with Interim Administrator Gary Rosema, who's
he looks exhausted.
Sheriff. And I don't know if anybody follows me still, like, because I'm still doing the live, you know, tweet cast from on Twitter, because I refuse to call it the other name.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot stay focused when Rosamund is talking. He literally is like verbal melatonin for me. I mean, it's just like, I'm using that in a sentence today. The shutters just go down on my eyes, and I'm just like, I literally want to play his voice at night to treat my insomnia because it would do the trick. I'm telling you.
Verbal melatonin.
He is the most soothing, calming, and I'm like, oh, really important
Thank
stuff.
Thank you, Gary. That's so funny. He does have I used his audio today. He does have a very soothing voice.
It's very... it's very monotone and very one note, and it's quiet, and you have to like strain to hear it. Yeah. And eventually, then you wake up 3 hours later and wonder what happened. I professionally, I'm like, oh God, this is going to be very challenging. Personally, I think it's great.
I love it. Mr. Moss goes to Washington.
Oh gosh, yes. Oh man. All right. So can I just vent just a tiny bit?
Please do.
As someone who constantly has to cover all of the outrage of that often surrounds the Ottawa Impact members of the Board of Commissioners.
Sure.
I'm kind of tired about reacting to everything because I don't want to write about everything.
Like, I agree.
I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
And I know that them going to Washington to a White House dinner raises a lot of eyebrows. And did the county pay for it? And how much did they pay for it? But also, I'm just like, I mean, like, there's a certain point where you just, like, not everything is, you know, a class five reaction. And I'm mildly interested, but I think that my outrage meter has been warped over the last couple of years, where my threshold is fairly high now. So it kind of has to be, like, sort of catastrophic for me to really buy into some of the emotional reaction that I see from people.
You need a 30,000 pound bomb.
Yeah, I do.
What does she need? A 30,000 pound bomb?
30,000 pound bomb. I do know a little bit. I don't have like any official documentation, but I do know a little bit. They did want to fly, and Rosema kind of put the kibosh on that and said, well, no, y'all have to carpool, which wouldn't that be a fun car trip to
thanks.
With all of them. So it was like, you know, the OIs go to Washington in a car, and I'm sure that we paid for their lodging and their meals.
Why?
That part, I don't know. I don't really know what the rules are in terms of like the board. I know that there are certain individual commissioners that go to like conferences and stuff all the time. I don't know what differentiates this from others. They all went to NACO.
Yeah. That was last year, wasn't it? Yeah, okay.
No, it was this year.
Yeah, you're right.
It's right at the beginning of the year and the majority of the board went. So
yeah,
like,
you're right. Yeah.
I don't know how a municipality differentiates because I know that there's some criticism that this White House leadership conference is partisan in nature.
Here's the thing.
I don't know if there's a rule against that, though. Like that's part of the problem.
It's also in the way that they post it, okay? The way that they post it and they tag the White House and RFK Jr. as if, you know, they've got... come on. It's the way that they post it.
Well, my favorite was when they were plugging the director of housing and I was like, oh, did you do a tour? Did you see John Gibbs
over
there?
Yeah, no doubt.
Did you high five him?
Yeah, did you high five John Gibbs? I mean, come on. But you know what? I mean,
how's he doing these days?
Look, if they were going out there and they brought back some wealthful information, hey, okay, that's great. It's just the posturing. But you're right. When you react to everything, then how long have we been talking about him just now?
Well, yeah. I mean, you're kind of positioning them to be able to capture this political moment for, you know, it extends the shelf life.
Right.
And then they can go on the defensive and say, see, the progressives are trying to eliminate our ability to, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, man.
And, you know, that's sort of like the cyclical nature of a lot of this stuff.
That was an odd question that Commissioner Moss had asked MSU Extension about diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Oh, yeah.
Get off that train, pal.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's there's not much that they can capitalize on right now. There's no obvious controversies happening in the county. They already did all the things basically that they wanted to do. They just have to defend some of their positions now. But there's not a whole lot that they can pick at, you know, the scab with. And so I guess this is the way that they maintain relevancy to their base.
Right. And, you know, and if it gets them a little shout out in a newspaper or on TV.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, radio's not good enough for them.
Well, I mean, and I think that I've made that point before, like where it's like, oh yeah, you know, like I once laid eyes on a Democrat in a, you know, or I shook the hand of a former governor, mm-hmm. and, you know, now do I have the scarlet letter because I happen to breathe the same air as somebody mm-hmm. who might have been a progressive? It's mm-hmm. just, how far do we take this?
I know.
You know, like looking into third party vendors and endorsements of third, fourth party sites. Mm-hmm. It's just,
I know.
Frankly, it's just stupid.
I know.
It is.
You're right. There's a lot going on in the world, and there's a lot more bigger things than Ottawa County.
Well, right. I mean, the county from a you know, business standpoint needs to like really monitor what it's doing from not an arm's length transaction, but a direct transaction. Like the person that we're contracting these services for, mm-hmm. is there any problematic things with them? I don't care if they have like an aunt, you know, Aunt Mary that, you know, is a raging Democrat, mm-hmm. and has a radical blog that posts about Democratic things. Who cares? Mm-hmm. I am working with these people over here. Aunt Mary visits like 2 times a year. Mm-hmm. That's not the concern. Right. And so there's a lot of distraction and exaggeration that sort of tries to manufacture these moments of outrage. And it's not successful, but we do continue to talk about it because I think that a lot of people in the group that sort of, you know, was like this counter resistance to Ottawa Impact, mm-hmm. has sort of conditioned themselves to react that way.
Right.
And because paranoia is at an all-time high.
It is at an all-time high.
Yeah.
I'm going to shift gears here. I did hear somebody yesterday call this big, beautiful bill the murder bill. I sent you a press release, Governor Whitmer, and a new report. We are we're Congressional District 3, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Well, in the top of, so Ottawa is split evenly where the 3rd Congressional District is in the northern half and mm-hmm. the 4th Congressional District is in the southern half.
Okay. So for MI3, 13,800 people, that's an estimate, would lose Medicaid. Or they actually would lose the Affordable Care Act. I'm sorry. Mm. So that would include me. Mm-hmm. 16,000 would lose Medicaid and 29,880 people would completely lose insurance. Now, this is estimates if this bill passes.
Yeah.
This is disgusting. I'm absolutely disgusted.
And again, it's just to justify extending the tax cuts that Trump put into place in his first administration. Mm-hmm. I try to look at things from a multi, you know, dimensional perspective when I can, but I don't really see a whole lot of defense that I can bring to this. I do think that government spending is not often monitored very well. Mm-hmm. And so there is a valid argument for that, but I just find that, the way that the pushback happens whenever it does happen, usually from the conservative side of things, you know, Democrats tend to spend more, Republicans try to, you know, cut it back. Mm-hmm. And so there's sort of a yin and yang to that.
Sure.
And so there's a natural tension, which is probably good in theory. But when you see the corrections happen, it's often like a hatchet instead of a scalpel.
Right.
And people just don't really think through like the repercussions of the most vulnerable. And so I just think that it would be more palatable if people could actually just have discussions to vet some of these things without these like just widespread edicts and mandates and that sort of thing.
I'm just disgusted. I'm disgusted by it all. I'm just disgusted. I'm disgusted with the political divide in this country. I you know, and we have a ceasefire right now. We don't even know what the ceasefire entails, do we?
No. And frankly, I don't trust the information that comes from the White House to announce for 2 separate sovereign countries that they have mutually agreed to a ceasefire.
Okay.
I mean, I'd like to hear it from them. Mm-hmm. Israel is fine and can, you know, issue their own press releases is all I'm saying.
Man.
But I was sitting watching a movie with my family. My parents were in town and mm-hmm. I'm sitting there with the kids and I get the news alert that we had done the airstrikes mm-hmm. in Iran. And I tell my parents that, and obviously they get concerned. And then my youngest started getting pretty upset.
Yeah.
And she thinks, well, are we at war? And I just, mm-hmm. and then I realize, okay, she's 8. I can't say these things in front of her
right.
without, okay, so duly noted. And then I said, no, we're okay. But you know, are we? Because I know that there's going to be some times where I'm going to sugarcoat some things for my kids because I don't want to create anxiety in my kids. Mm-hmm. And there are certain things that are just completely beyond my control that I don't necessarily want to keep them up at night over. Like, that's my job.
Right. I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yep. I know what you're saying. Yeah. It's just been a couple of weeks here, hasn't it? My gosh.
But I do think that, you know, presidents should have the option to react in emergent situations without necessarily getting congressional approval. So I know that's not necessarily the most popular take. But I also think that when we are deciding to do what we did this past weekend, it probably should not have been handled that way because that was not an emergent threat to our interests.
We should have at least,
you know, not. Also, we sort of said we were going to, like, a week ahead of time.
Right.
You know, I'm going to decide within the next 2 to 3 weeks whether I'm going to bomb your country. That's a really weird flex for a president to say. I know that that's sort of giving them an indication that, hey, you might want to move some people out of the way in some places that we might want to, you know, drop bombs on. But politics is so bizarre. Now. Foreign diplomacy is just so weird.
I'm telling you. Yeah, he is. He says that they could have taken over Iran's oil supply, but he says they'll need that money to get back on their feet. And he says that Iran is done trying to create a nuclear weapon. So we'll see.
Oh, sure. Sure.
I don't
just
buy
like
it.
Just like they were in the 90s.
I know. It's
past
just
30 years. And
yeah.
It's got some 2002 vibes, doesn't it? You know.
Yeah, it does.
Weapons of mass destruction it has. In Iraq.
Just like, oh my God, I'm exhausted.
Also, but I will say one thing that I was surprised about is that you hear so much about Iran is, you know, enriching uranium and plutonium and whatever it is that makes, you know, nuclear weapons. And I guess they have kicked out the monitors years ago. And I guess I just sort of assumed that they had nuclear bombs at this point. And I just thought, wait, how fast was this weapons development program moving? Because it's been a long time since there was actually any sort of monitoring of the situation. I mean, a long time. How did they not have a nuclear bomb?
You're right.
Isn't that kind of weird? You know,
and
maybe they were just puffing the whole time because that's sort of like what countries do.
And then we have to worry about possible sleeper cells, right?
Yeah, I think that it's very naive for people to think that that isn't something that could happen.
Dirk, you want to say anything on that microphone or no?
You got to move the microphone to your mouth. He doesn't want to say
it. It's a talkie.
Oh, boy. I can edit this.
I think the sleeper cells have to be considered very strongly.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know someone who knows someone who knows someone. Just leave it at that. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, and there's just, you know, like, we've all watched the spy movies, right? There are soft targets that you can hit where you can have a much more widespread effect than, like, say, eliminating, you know, the top commander in chief of the country. Like, you can poison a water supply.
Oh,
you can create power outages.
Oh, yeah.
And at the peak of, you know, summer heat.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
There's a lot of ways to hurt people that forces your leadership to come to the table.
I mean, I'm sure that everyone is being a little bit more mindful of their surroundings. Mm-hmm.
Glad that we get the water from the lake right now.
I'm just glad we live near a lake. Yeah. Let's leave it at that. All right. So what are you working on? Because we're coming up on 25 minutes here. Not that I need to wrap this up.
Well, the
only
other thing is the Campbell plant.
Yeah, I haven't seen you in so long.
Yes, I know. I know. 2 weeks is a long time. There's so much that happened. So Dana Nessel has tried to intervene in challenging the Department of Energy's executive order, essentially, that mandates that the Campbell plant be available for an additional 90 days beyond its planned closure date, which was supposed to be May 31st. Mm-hmm. She has since filed in court as well. I don't know exactly where this is going to go, but what we have seen is that exactly what I sort of predicted in the last story that I wrote, which is the cost to maintain keeping a plant open when it has already been factored into a budget 4 years ahead of time on how to close it. And now you're adding in all of these coal shipments. You got to call staff back. You got to pay them at a higher rate for temporary jobs. You've got to keep the lights on. You got to keep, you know, like all of these things, the logistics of doing this, even if it's not actually burning coal and generating power, you have to have all these things available if needed.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a cost that companies will not absorb. It's a mandate from the government. They are going to pass it along to their customers. They've already filed with the state regulatory agencies to justify this cost. And now that's where Nestle is stepping in saying, well, wait a minute, you just got a big price hike for other things that they asked for, and now you're asking for more. But I mean, if the customers don't pay for it, then consumers is going to probably sue the federal government. I would. You can't mandate that I at a cost of like possibly $3 million a day to keep a power plant open. I mean, coal in the open market is over $100 a ton. And they went and when they were burning in 2024, they were burning 3,700 tons of coal a day.
Wow.
So that's a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and who pays for it? But oftentimes we find mandates from the government and they're often unfunded and no one knows who's going to pay for it. And I mean, this is going to be a messy situation that's probably going to carry over for a couple of years. Even if that plant closes at the end of the summer, this isn't over.
It's not over, is it?
No.
Well, I think that's it for us. This is over. You think we're wrapping up?
Well, I hope that I see you next week.
Well,
if that's what you mean.
No, it's for, yeah. Because we're coming up on the 4th of July weekend, so we'll meet on Wednesday.
Yeah.
And we'll do another podcast. I'm Mary Ellen Murphy with WGHN Radio.
And I'm Sarah Leach with the Ottawa News Network.
Rock is my life, and this is my song.
Rock is my life, and this is my song. It's a crying shame.